I'm Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Marketing Trends and the Leeds Art Week.
Sports and brands are synonymous with one another. The Boston Red Sox are known for the famous Sicko sign that resides beyond the Green Monster. The University of Oregon goes hand in hand with apparel and shoe giant Nike, and the University of North Carolina is tightly associated with the Jumpman himself and the Jordan Brand logo that graces its uniforms. There is no doubt that brands have made a lasting impression on fan bases everywhere thanks to sports.
Brands have a really interesting opportunity to actually create some traditions around game day that are synonymous with the brands, and finding things that are meaningful to the brands and become great traditions. A carpet company rolling out the carpet for the team to enter the field, or a particular sign being reminiscent of the kind of offering that a company can bring, or a sponsor of a particular segment or kind of content that becomes part of a game tradition.
But how brands become one with a university is a sticky topic. It requires identifying the right fit between a brand and a school or sport, implementing a proper strategy, and activating the sponsorship at the right time. With another year of collegiate athletics around the corner, Jennifer Davis, the CMO at Learfield, joined the show to discuss how the company brings big partnerships to life between brands and universities. Plus, she explains how sports marketing has become a much more integral piece of the overall sales funnel. Enjoy this episode. This message is brought to you by Salesforce. Hey, marketers. Today's B2B buyers are more complex than ever, and every buying committee has different needs and goals. Salesforce can help. We'll show you how to put each and every customer at the center of your B2B marketing strategy, and you'll learn how top brands like Lyft approach account-based marketing. Salesforce, market to every account, speak to every buyer. Find free B2B marketing and ABM resources at sfdc.co/every-buyer.
Welcome to Marketing Trends. I'm Ian Faison, host of Marketing Trends, and today we are joined by special guest, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Excited to have you on the show, excited to chat all things marketing as always. We're going to talk about your background, and we're also going to talk about the cool stuff that you're doing at Learfield. Let's get into it. How'd you get started in marketing?
Well, I parlayed an internship in college to work for a software startup. I was reminded recently that like 10 hours after I graduated, I showed up to work and in a marketing coordinator role for the organization. I think I was the 10th employee and saw that grow to 60 employees and just use that as a platform to really grow, not just in marketing, but as a business person. And over the years, I've worked for different companies in different industries and got a different perspective. But it all goes back to those very early days selling software to schools, which is what our original business was.
Awesome. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what it means to be CMO of Learfield IMG College.
Yeah. Learfield, for those who aren't familiar with the company, is a leading provider of multimedia rights services and a whole host of ticketing and licensing and marketing services for universities, particularly athletic departments, but we also do work with performing arts centers and others on campus as well and beyond. And then we work very closely with brands to connect them to fans. And so at the center of our world is talking to fans, and college sports fans are some of the most loyal and enthusiastic fans of any product or service on the planet, I'm convinced. And so what it's like to be in the CMO role here is to be surrounded by the passion and loyalty of college sports fans.
And so who are your customers? Is it those colleges and universities?
We do have products that are purchased and consumed by universities, but we also have brand clients that we support from a marketing perspective, putting together sponsorship programs so that they can build their brand and acquire more customers among college sports fans.
Cool. So what are some kind of examples of the types of folks that you would work with?
Well, we have national clients as well as local clients. So you can imagine if you just picture a college town and a stadium or an arena, there are lots of brand clients within the shadow of that stadium. And then zooming out, we have regional brand clients that work across properties and they want to advertise to fans in the state of Georgia or across the Midwest. Many of them are global brands, but that will reach out to, connect with schools across the country. Recent sponsors at that level have been, brands like Unilever and Kellogg's and Nissan and others that are, reaching more broadly and have a national reach.
Tell me a little bit more about what it means to be CMO and chief of comms here. Are you working with customers on a day-to-day basis? Are you working on marketing campaigns on a day-to-day basis? What are you working on?
I think every day is a little different, especially because I'm relatively new to the organization. I just crossed over 100 days. And so it's been a little bit of everything. First and foremost, there's nothing that beats interactions with customers. And our partners have been teaching me a lot about what's important to them and to our business moving forward. So certainly brand client interactions, work with our school properties are all very important to me onboarding. I would also say that I've been spending some time analyzing the business, getting to know the nuances of how we go to market and putting plans in place and innovations in the marketing organization that would take us to the next level. We have grown organically and through acquisitions. Learfield has a history that's nearly 50 years old and has changed dramatically in that time. And so there's a lot to learn. And so I would say it's listening to our partners, learning, and then putting plans in place for the future. And that includes campaign planning and system and technology infrastructure establishment and design work that we're doing, working across our entire portfolio. So every day is a little different, that's for sure.
And I'm curious, how do you kind of navigate, setting up a marketing strategy and structure for one company that has so many different types of solutions and types of things that you offer?
This is one of the areas where I think my previous experience at Amazon Web Service serves me, because the AWS portfolio obviously is broad and deep and has a lot of diversity and variety to it. So I was able to learn a lot about how to manage a broad and diverse portfolio of products and bring that to Learfield. So I guess that's primarily how I've approached it, is this idea of creating an offering to our brand clients that unifies the story that we have to tell. And so the real emphasis for me has been really understanding who the hero of our story is, who is the buyer, the customer, the influencer, making our business run, and then matching the right solutions to that. And so that's how I've approached it. And we do have a diverse portfolio, many of which companies that are wholly owned subsidiaries and run independently. We have different brands, but I've really been pulling those together to look for opportunities for synergy, opportunities for best practice sharing, and frankly, just cross-company collaboration. So we've implemented a marketing advisory council, pulling senior leaders across the whole company together to facilitate some of these conversations, which had either rarely occurred or didn't occur at all before.
I was going to ask that, what was that process like before Learfield, before any of this?
I would say before I came in, others started thinking about pulling this together. And frankly, we have a new CEO as well who emphasized looking across the business for these best practices and collaboration points of collaboration. But I would say the emphasis was on individual businesses with a leader running and achieving their goals independently and being managed more like a portfolio than a platform.
Yeah,
if you totally will. And so coming in, I think myself and others before me in the organization began to see the opportunity for pulling some things together and really taking advantage of the expertise, the deep expertise that exists in the company in pockets and pulling it together for the benefit of the whole. So that's been one of the things that's been important to me in these early days.
Yeah, it's a very funny thing, right? When you have, you know, the strength of a company where you have all these different, you know, brands or you know, GMs that are leading brands that have been running it like a business, right? And when you come in as someone who's trying to kind of figure out how you can stitch together what you need to cross-sell opportunities, figure out all that stuff, it's a unique challenge.
Yeah, it is. And it really requires a consultative approach, I would say, because one thing I knew coming in is that I wasn't going to know everything. I didn't have the answer. Like, I wasn't coming in with the answer. I'm so glad you hired me because I have the answer. It was more of let's discover it together. And we've already started to do that, discovering what is right for each of our individual brands as we pull those together, what is right for the corporate story that we're telling. All of those is deeply informed by the wildly talented people I get to work with every day and learn from. And hopefully my job is to facilitate, to orchestrate in a way, to bring out those best talents and superpowers and weave it together in a way that's cohesive and really brings meaning and value to, you know, to our partners.
And you've been CMO a couple of times before this. This is something, as you mentioned, you know, you're past your 100-day mark. So you've got a little bit of time under your belt here on this, but was there any like way that you approached this different from times in the past or some things that you wanted to make sure that you accomplished in that amount of time?
The short answer is yes. This is not my first time in this chair. And I hopefully I've learned some things along the way. If any of the listeners on the show find themselves looking to make a transition or to step into a new role, whether promoted internally or recruited from the outside, I highly recommend creating your own onboarding plan. And especially at the senior level and coming in at an executive level to an organization, some organizations are better than others at putting together onboarding plans. But even companies who are exceptional at it tend to fall down at the executive level because they tend to not put executives into the same, you know, rookie camps as other employees. And so it's very important to have a plan for success and to create what many call a strategic imperative. You want to do an assessment of the organization. You want to come in and be able to paint a clear picture. So I set some goals for myself. My goals were to get to know the organization, to get to know the people within it. I actually took the opportunity to connect personally to everybody in the marketing and comms organization, even if it was for a quick chat and just putting names to faces and getting feedback. I immersed myself in data and conducted some research of my own. And all of that helped lead to some conclusions and ultimately a strategy plan that I read with our executive team, over the past weeks and rolled out even in the past couple of weeks to my team for this new fiscal year that began July 1. And so being able to put that all in place and start executing it against it is very important. And I would say one of the things that is a huge unlock of value that I did this time that maybe I wasn't as purposeful about in previous roles was pre-boarding. And what I mean by that is prior to my official start date, I got a list of some key stakeholders and some key collaborators within the company. And I scheduled meetings with them before I started. I literally could do nothing for them. We could just have a conversation with the goal of me listening and hearing what was going well, what were some of the challenges, how they imagined us working together. And those pre-boarding conversations, I'd been told that they would be really powerful. And for me, they were absolutely game-changing and helped accelerate me into being able to execute on that 100-day plan.
I love that. Pre-boarding. That's great.
Pre-boarding.
You know, you're in that mode. You did all that setup work. you're looking at longer term things, I'd imagine, you know, getting some quick wins and all that. And now you're trying to say, okay, what's my plan of attack here? Are you, do you have any campaigns in the works? Do you have any things that you're really excited about right now?
We do have some things coming down the line. I don't want to disclose them too early, but there's some work that we have done to really understand the college fan that I'm excited to get out there. So stay tuned, everyone, for hearing more about some research that we've done and some analysis that we've embarked on to really understand the college sports fan and that audience, if you will, and yeah, how brands might tap into it. So that's something I'm very excited about. We've been obviously investing in this space, not only for decades, but with a data and analytics platform over the past couple of years, and to see that translate into some insights that we can syndicate. So I'm excited about that. I'm also excited. Let's just acknowledge for a moment that this past year has been a strange one for sports and live events.
For sure.
Coming back into this fall, I'm excited for just the renewed interest in the space and people coming together, you know, fall football kickoff and the like has been such a strong part of so many people's traditions, and things will feel quite normal to many people when they can get back to listening to their favorite teams or back into a stadium or engaging with their favorite schools. And so I'm excited to see that come to fruition. And that's been a real big theme of the conversations that we're having with so many of our brand clients that want to be part. They want to be part of this kind of monumental coming back together, you know, because people never stopped being fans. They just, they were kind of, you know, unfulfilled fans that, you know, they're
totally
couldn't really engage the way that they normally do. And so what we've done is layered, you know, the return of some more traditional fan experiences like game days and the like, campus experiences, with a whole host of digital solutions that we can connect to fans, not just on game day, but every day, using first-party fan data, which is obviously very important in this cookie-free world that we're emerging into. And those now can combine to create really integrated experiences for brands. And we're excited to see, again, all of this kind of come roaring back together.
You know, take a great, amazing school like the Army West Point Black Knights, which if you go to Learfield.com and check out their partners, you'll see my beloved Black Knights on there. You take someone like that, obviously, you know, for Army, it's a global brand. You have, you know, a massive number of graduates and all sorts of people that want to be part of what, you know, Army is doing at any given time. What does it look like when a company wants to work with a school like that, or a university or something? Like, what, like, how does this normally work? Are they, you know, for our listeners who are working at, you know, a brand right now that want to be, that want to do more work with collegiate athletics or want to work more with the university? Like, how does this work?
Great question. And it is as nuanced as the brand conversations that we have, but there are some themes that emerge. First and foremost, there is a diversity in this portfolio that we can bring. So a lot of this happens in consultation with the brand to really understand what they're trying to accomplish. But for any given brand, the components of an integrated campaign and sponsorship could look like in-stadium activation of signage. It could look like spots on radio and audio broadcast of the games. It could look like digital engagements on the official athletic websites and in programmatic display ads that go out across multiple platforms. It can also be all sorts of signage and activations that happen in a hospitality context. So some brands want to get their brand name out there, but other brands use college sports marketing to build loyalty among their current customers by inviting them to hospitality events and kind of VIP tailgating experiences. So we do that as well. So if you imagine, if you will, kind of that simplified marketing and sales funnel of, you know, awareness and consideration and preference down to loyalty, we have kind of offerings that hit every single one of those. And that actually might be a surprise to many brands who might be thinking that sports sponsorships are really top of the funnel, broad brand awareness. And we certainly, like, we've, you know, spent decades perfecting that, but we have added to it over the years with more and more offerings that take the brand lower and lower into the funnel with an engaged fan. And we've seen really great conversion success on sweepstakes offers and digital advertising and other things that actually, again, round out that portfolio and allow, you know, the brand to connect in new and meaningful ways. And we don't stop there. We've actually innovated whole new products that we have brought to the college space. For instance, we, for the past couple of years, we've done a esports tournament series that we call Level Next, which actually brings sponsors to students and other participants who are affiliated with the school actually participating in a sports tournament. And we broadcast those on Twitch, and we have live commentators for hours on end as the tournament plays out. Again, a whole new way for brands to connect with fans of a school, but in, but again, not in a maybe traditional sport. So
that's right.
It's been a fun thing. We've done Madden tournaments. We just finished up a Rocket League tournament, and some more exciting things are coming in the fall. So stay tuned for that as that continues to roll out.
So let's say we wanted to get Marketing Trends to be like the official podcast, like marketing podcast of like the Learfield portfolio, which I feel like from a budget perspective, we'll have to work on that. But I feel like thematically, there's probably a lot of marketing majors that are playing sports and a lot of people who listen, you know, who want to do that sort of stuff. Is that the sort of thing that would happen, that someone would come to you and say like, oh, we want to be, or I guess that would be like a more NCAA thing. But if you wanted to be, you know, a sponsor of like a huge percentage of your portfolio versus like just those smaller, you know, sort of things, is that like, or do we need to go to each individual school and say like, we're the official marketing podcast of like, you know, Army, well, we already are of Army, that's official, but so for
there you
else.
Go. There you go. I love it. So the answer is a little bit of both, I would say, because college, although they have league affiliations, they're not a league, you know, so to speak. It's each school participates in games and sets a lot of their own policy and owns their own brands. And there are different opportunities, sponsorship opportunities at every school, because every school has different facilities and different investments that they've made and various things. And so what we do for our national partners who do want to kind of be the voice, across the industry, is that we put together a program and then identify the schools across the country. And it could be 5 schools, 10 schools. You know, we work with 190 properties, so we have lots of flexibility there to put together something that gives them the reach that they need for that those programs. And it's interesting because we've certainly seen people take that lens to say, okay, how can I treat this as a national platform to get my brand out there and to engage with fans? We've also seen the reverse, which is an interesting trend that's happening, where maybe a local credit union in Wisconsin will have a relationship with the University of Wisconsin, a very strong brand in the state. And they, through their analysis of their customer base and our analysis of our fan base, have determined that there are a lot of Wisconsin fans that don't live in the shadow of the stadium. They're not in Madison. They live in California, or they live in New York, or they live in Texas. And they would very well be potentially customers of this credit union or customers of other brands that have that affiliation with the school. And so we've also seen that reverse, where a company who wants a national reach is using their affiliation with a particular school or group of schools to go national. Being able to tailor the programs to the individual needs of the brands is part of, I guess, the secret sauce that we can bring to bear.
Yeah, I mean, it's like my West Point example, right? It's like I've listened to I don't even know how many Army football games, and the vast majority of Army football fans are not, you know, sitting there at West Point on game day weekend. I mean, and you figure just like alumni networks are so powerful. And so, and they're constantly asking for you for money, but they're so powerful and they have, you know, such strong, you know, brand identities that enable to be able to reach those people all over the country, is a huge boon for a lot of potential brands.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because just kind of zooming out as a marketer, as a business person, you know, I might love to get a Starbucks drink, or, you know, I might wait in line to get the latest iPhone. I'm not camping, but I'm, you know, I might wait in line, but I'm not leaving money in my will to Starbucks. I'm not trash talking other people about my, you know, other brands that I might consume, but people are wonderfully enthusiastic about their brands, and they're so loyal because it's not just, they're not just a fan. They are, you are Army. You have these affiliations. Maybe it's something on your resume. You're an alum yourself, or you know somebody who was, or you were raised going to games. All those things are wrapped up in memory and experience. It's just a really powerful brand connection. And our brands find that when they can tap into that, there's just fans want to do business with people who are connected to their favorite college and university. And we can tap into that at the local level and then also do national programs as well.
Yeah, I mean, it speaks to something we've talked about a lot on this show, which is like, you know, so often, and I love sponsorships, so I always love talking about sponsorships, but it speaks to what I think is one of the strongest thing that marketers can do is be as close to something that somebody like loves. That's like their favorite thing, right? It's like, if your favorite thing on earth is Kentucky basketball, as a marketer, like, I want to be as close to Kentucky basketball as I can get. If your favorite show is Survivor, then I want to be as close to Survivor as I can get. I mean, it's a little difficult with advertising, I think, because there's still a little bit of separation there. But with sponsorship, it's like, you know, this money is going towards, you know, obviously the school and the and everything, but like, there is a little bit more of a one-to-one, you know, relationship there than when I watch an ad for, you know, when I'm watching Survivor for whatever, for Pampers for my 8-week-old, that I'm like I don't think it's exactly supporting Survivor there, but for schools it really is.
Well, and you're absolutely right, and I also think colleges and universities are wrapped in wonderful traditions. You know, if you're a student at a school, there are statues in the lobby of the library that you're rubbing before a test for good luck, or there's a ceremony that you're a part of upon graduation, or some milestones. And like, colleges are about these traditions. So brands have a really interesting opportunity, and we've facilitated this over the decades, to actually create some traditions around game day that are synonymous with the brands, and finding things that are meaningful to the brands and become great traditions. You know, a carpet company rolling out the carpet for the team to enter the field, or a particular sign being reminiscent of the kind of offering that a company can bring, or a sponsor of a particular segment or kind of content that becomes part of a game tradition. I mean, like, how cool is that? And to be able to be a part of that as a brand for the long term is just tapping into every new freshman class and every new baby born, and those fan families are just another potential customer that are coming into the fold and being part of that community, even if it's a virtual community. So it's exciting to see, you know, brands think about really tapping into that and having more meaning. They're not just running it as a short-term campaign. It's something that they're committing to be a part of that community.
And I think that sort of stuff is where the team can get creative. And it's not just slapping your name and logo on something. It's about how deep of a connection you can actually make. And it's a perfect segue into this new world that we just jumped into with name, image, and likeness, changing college athletics essentially overnight. You know, you work with so many, you know, Division I teams. I'm just curious if you have any thoughts on name, image, and likeness. And I think we're, you know, on the podcast, I've talked about, like, this is a really exciting time for marketers because this is a, you know, generation of people that it's going to be totally new and interesting how this stuff works.
Yeah, and I think new and interesting are good words to describe it, because there's a lot that's unknown. It's uncharted territory. We're excited about what the future might hold as these pieces come together. I would say our focus has been working with our university partners throughout the process of planning and as they have crafted their policies, you know, we've been a good partner to them, I hope, in all of that, so that they can help navigate every state and frankly, down to the school level, or creating their own rules of the road. But there are some common themes that we're helping the universities with, for instance, around student athlete education, around student athlete sponsorship disclosures, so that the schools can stay in compliance. So I would say our lens has been really helping, our school partners do what they need to do. But it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out in the coming months and years, really. I think we're excited to be a part of that moving forward and again, partner, as we've always tried to, as the landscape continues to evolve.
You know, another thing that you all recently did was you announced a partnership with Elevate Sports. It's helping schools drive revenue across their sports properties. Wonder if you could just share a little bit more about that and why that's exciting.
Sure. Well, we have lots of partnerships across the industry as we bring best-in-class solutions together and make them available to our partner organizations. The Elevate opportunity is a very exciting one for a number of reasons. Elevate has grown their portfolio, and I don't want to speak on their behalf, but it's exciting to watch what they've been able to do. And one of the things that we heard a lot from our partner schools is they wanted to explore more in the naming rights space. And so Elevate has some great capabilities there, some analytical tools they use to value naming rights of stadiums and arenas. And some universities have done that kind of thing and others have not. And so again, it provides a great opportunity for us to partner. And then when a school has an opportunity or a facility has an opportunity for naming rights and other related kind of facilities optimization work, we have a partner that we can bring in to really provide best in class consultation and make sure that they're getting the maximum value from that effort.
You wrote a book called Yes. Decisions Well Made. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, what was your inspiration? And give us a sneak preview here.
Sure. The book is coming out in August from New Degree Press. It's called Well-Made Decisions. And the impetus for it, I would say, writing a book has been on my bucket list for a while. But then this thing happened called a pandemic and I was stuck at home. So I feel like the formula was bucket list plus quarantine equals book. So that's how that came to be. I was inspired to write on this particular topic because what I realized is I'm a voracious reader myself, and I'm a student of business and leadership. And I didn't have to squint too hard at my own bookshelf and maybe even the writings that I had done in the past to realize that a common theme was around making decisions. And I mean that in a different way than is often thought about. We think about decisions as a choice, a binary yes, no, pro, con kind of event. And in my experience in business, the decision is not the finish line, it's a starting line. And the value of any decision that you make happens because of everything that happens after. You decide to buy a company, I've been involved in those. You decide to launch a brand, I've done that. You decide to expand to a new market. All of those had a due diligence process where you converge a lot of activity and you make a decision. You sign the papers, you transfer the capital, whatever it is that marked that moment. And then from here on out, decision scientists would say, great, you made the decision, you're done. But the truth is, you make that decision right by everything that goes into the work streams afterwards. And so it's all about communication and culture and building the kind of capability in your organization so that you can execute and implement well. So that's what the book is about. I liken decisions to what Thomas Edison said about genius, that it's 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. Yeah. And decisions are just like that. The 99% sweat-inducing work happens after the decision is made. And so smart leaders will identify what kind of decision needs to be made, will make it as quickly as they can with the best information they have available, and are building an organization that can execute well and make their decisions right.
I love it. Couldn't agree more. That's awesome. We're excited to check it out here.
Awesome. Thanks.
And we'll do you have a URL where it's gonna live? We can drop it into the show notes.
Sure, absolutely. It's www.wellmadedecisions.com. And again, by the end of August, early September, it'll be available wherever books are sold.
Wonderful. That's exciting. Congrats.
Thank you.
What's next for Learfield? What's next for you?
I will look forward to the fact that I won't be starting a new job and writing a book at the same time. That'll be nice to be beyond that. Really, what's next for us is we're embarking into a new year. Our fiscal year begins in July and new sports season. So there's so many things that are back for us. There's so many innovations that we've developed over the past couple of years that now we'll have a chance to really get out into the marketplace. And so we're excited to see where that goes. I know from a marketing perspective, our team is growing and we are evolving how we think about marketing at the corporate level and at a communications level and at the product marketing level as well. And so I'm building new capabilities into the organization that this will be a year of adding some capabilities, kind of standing up functions and doing a lot of experiments to figure out how best we deploy these new capabilities to serve our partners. And so we'll be rolling those out. And again, it won't be long before I'm working on, you know, what our 2022 plans will be and taking those forward, hopefully informed by all those great experiments that I ran. And again, now that stakes are really high, I just wrote a book on decision making. So hopefully we'll be able to make some good ones and then make the ones that we make, you know, right, by implementing well. So that's what's next for us, implementing what's ahead and planning for these next phases of the future.
All right, let's get to our lightning round. These questions are fast and easy, just like marketing with Salesforce. You can go to salesforce.com/marketing to learn more about marketing on the world's number one CRM. That is Salesforce. Put your customer at the center of every interaction. Go to salesforce.com/marketing to learn more. Lightning round questions. Jennifer, are you ready?
I am ready.
Number one, what is the hardest decision that you've had to make in your career?
Probably to leave a role where I was doing well and I really liked the company and the people, but I was restless and felt like I wasn't growing.
Do you have a favorite sports team?
Well, we lived in Oregon for many years. During the years where Joey Harrington, Marcus Mariota were coming up, so really good years to be Oregon fans. So I guess University of Oregon would be my first choice.
If you weren't in marketing at all or business, what do you think you'd be doing?
As a kid, I wanted to be an architect. That was my pursuit up until the point I took drafting.
Oh man, I was so bad at drafting.
And then I realized it wasn't for me.
Gosh. I was really just truly bad at drafting. Don't like straight lines. Never have.
Yeah, the very precise arrowheads. It probably didn't help that I was a freshman girl taking drafting that was out in like the shop area and we drew car parts for an entire semester. That probably played a role in it, but I like to think I made a good choice or it turned out well.
Indeed. What do you do for fun?
Well, I have two kids, and so a lot of the fun that my husband and I do is the things that they're into. And so my son is a huge sports fan, so you can imagine how excited he is about me taking this role. But like last night, we were watching the Home Run Derby and cheering on the talents that we saw there. So we watch a lot of sports as a family. We love performing arts as well. Plays and musicals and live music. We can't wait for live music to come back in full swing. And we love to travel. Just a couple of weeks ago, got back from a trip to Jamaica, which was wonderful, not only because the place was beautiful and we were with some friends who we love, but just to get on an airplane was just such a novelty and a welcome change.
Do you have a podcast or TV show or book that you've been checking out recently?
I just started watching Ted Lasso. I don't know if I should recommend it. I'm just a few episodes in, so maybe that isn't a good one.
Oh, it's like the best show literally of the decade. It's incredible.
During the early days of the pandemic, really before I consumed my life writing a book, our family was a big fan of The Good Place.
Yeah.
And I realized that some of the cast were in other things. I had somehow missed Veronica Mars. So in the early days of the pandemic, I like binge watched all those past Veronica Mars episodes. I'm not sure how I missed all of that. So again, it's been fun to kind of explore. Also, I would say we are waiting with bated breath for the last episode in this Loki series.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Me too. Can't wait.
Yeah, I know. My brain starts to melt or explode. I'm not sure which, but yeah, Marvel's doing some pretty amazing things in television right now. So that's exciting.
What is your best advice for a first-time CMO?
Think like a business person. I think when you get to a C-level role, your primary job is to make sure that the business strategy is set, that the organization is working the way it needs to, that you're building the culture, that you're helping the whole leadership team be more effective. And if you come in with too much of a functional lens, and now you need to know your stuff and you need to execute your marketing strategies, but if you understand how the score is kept for your business, you're going to be a much better partner to your CEO and to the whole leadership team.
Jennifer, that's it. That's all we got for today. Any final thoughts? Anything to plug?
Well, I would say that we are doing some really exciting things on our website, and I'm looking forward to rolling those out. So if you haven't checked out Learfield.com recently, by the time this runs, we'll have some new changes there that I think will be fun to share out.
Awesome. Well, we really appreciate you coming on. Everybody has until August to check out the new book. I'm jealous that you did it. Well-made decisions, and check it out in August. Thanks again.
Thanks so much.